CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Danny Meringue.
And then I went to this movie theater. This is it. I made a noise like this.
Dusty Hera.
Then this was horrible. All the people started getting sick and throwing up all over each other.
I'm beginning to like this kid, Mike.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080.
Are you good?
The Fan.
Hour number three of a Schultzy and Will edition of Danny and Dusty here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. Danny and Rusty taking a day or two off for the holiday season. Dusty on his way. Actually, he is down in Pasadena with the Oregon Ducks getting ready for their game in the Rose Bowl in the college football playoff against the Ohio State Buckeyes on New Year's Day. Yeah, Dusty got there with the team over the weekend, flew down there, seems to go pretty smoothly. And Will, one flight that didn't go very smoothly, you did tell me about this before the show today, and I wanted to hit on it before we got into the Ducks travel talk. We gave Gonzaga, or at least Nembhard from Gonzaga, the worst day on the web because of his three-point shot from half court with 4 seconds to go to ensure the loss to UCLA. But what happened to Gonzaga before could have been much worse. This was a Friday game, but apparently when Gonzaga basketball landed in Los Angeles for their game, they almost, and this was in like a smaller private jet style, it's an Embraer E-135 jet, so it's kind of one of those smaller people that usually see, you know, smaller groups or rich people riding in. It's literally, I'd say, less than 25% the size of a commercial airliner, but you see a video uploaded all over the internet. It's not really good audio, but you can see a commercial Delta plane taking off and almost clipping the top of this Gonzaga team jet in this little Embraer jet. Unfreaking believable. Thank goodness that the air traffic controller was paying attention. The videographer that put it up said he had never heard an ATC person speaking to a pilot telling them to stop, 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 like they did. Usually air traffic control contact, Will, it's not supposed to be frantic. It's supposed to be calm. You're supposed to, you know, be very clear and concise. And you're not really supposed to get too emotional. That's kind of how you're trained to do it from the pilots and from the air traffic controls end. But a little emotion slipping in there because some people were in grave freaking danger. And Will, this is already right after, I don't know if you saw the South Korean plane that tried to land on its belly in Seoul and ended up crashing at the end of the runway, killing 169 of 171 on board. God, as an aviation nut, as somebody that is obsessed with this kind of thing, you know, I know that all of these crashes have gotten us to safer air travel. It's really, really, really tiny of a chance that you're going to get into a crash. I think it's a better chance that you get into a car crash than you would an airline crash statistically. But seeing these kinds of things, Will, oh my God, it scares me.
Yeah, I mean, it's
thank God
crazy.
They're okay, by the way. Thank God.
It's crazy footage. I mean, I think the wheel like almost nicks him.
It was a close call.
And I want to know like how that happens. Because at some point you were given clearance to start going. So it's not like the pilot was just like, well, it's my time to leave.
I think two air traffic controllers both gave clearance, or one gave clearance to two planes accidentally, as because it was a perpendicular. The plane taking off was going over a plane trying to cross opposite, like under it, going basically from right to left as it was going from north to south. So just super scary. Saw that across my X feed and wanted to reiterate that did happen. And what a crappy weekend for air travel, apparently, around the world, because, go find it on Google or anywhere you get your news. The South Korean airline that crashed killed almost everybody aboard because their landing gear didn't come out, and they had to try to land on their belly, And it went about as bad as it could have. So, scary stuff. Thank God that the Gonzaga basketball team is okay. You know what? Maybe the worst day on the web shouldn't go to Nebhard, because maybe his brain wasn't in it. Like, after hearing, oh, hey, you almost got hit by another plane. Maybe that threw him off just a little bit.
I think that was after, was it not?
It said before. Oh. It said before their game on Friday against UCLA.
It's been a while since I've been in a plane. Would you have, like, as a passenger, do you think... Unless you have the window open, would you have known? Like, I'm not a window open guy.
Well, and I, honestly, it depends on if you're sitting on the right side of the plane, too. Because if you're on the one side where the plane didn't fly over, then you don't even see it.
Like, is it possible that none of them knew how close it was?
Because
in my head, like, I wouldn't have known. Like, if it's me and I'm in, you know, a two-person plane, right? Or it's one of those planes where it's two people to a row. I'm making sure that that window is closed. I would have never known unless someone said something. Like, unless someone looks out the window in that exact moment, there's no shot that I know. So do you think, like, the Gonzaga players, they come back, they look at, you know, like, video, or they're on, like, social media, and they're like, oh my God, we almost got hit by a plane. Like, when was this? Where'd this come from?
Yeah, I'm not sure that they were able to see it. That's a really good question, Will. But I do know that LAX in general, I don't want to blame either of these pilots, because LAX in general has one of the biggest, like, near-miss plane rates in all of the United States' airports. It's just super busy there. There's a lot of air traffic, and you understand that there's a lot of planes moving through a small area. But, cities like LA, I don't know if you've ever flown in and out of San Diego, Will, but
San Diego is terrifying.
Yeah, the low approach in and out of the city.
Well, you have
no
to go over the skyscraper, whatever that skyscraper is. You go over and then, like, right down. I'll tell you what, I did it once. Never again.
Well, and thank goodness that the Oregon Ducks didn't end up having to deal with any of this as far as, like, near misses go. Oh my goodness. Oregon getting ready to play in the Rose Bowl as we switch gears to their matchup with Ohio State. Lots to talk about as far as positional matchups go, Will. Previews. We'll get into that actually all tomorrow. I'd like to really spend most of the day tomorrow talking Oregon. We're going to talk, of course, Monday Night Football recap. We'll recap the Blazers game tonight against the Sixers. And I'll get to a couple of stories that I didn't get to today, like Luka Doncic robbed, Aaron Rodgers possibly killing his legacy. Is that being destroyed just with each passing game? We'll get to all of that stuff as well as some more Oregon Duck talk tomorrow. But I wanted to today, and we actually spent this segment talking about too much air travel, but I want to take this over into the next segment talking about the Ducks air travel and ask Will a couple of questions, and love to talk with you on the Vancouver Ford text line as well about whether or not you think Oregon has an advantage over Ohio State in the Rose Bowl because of the limited travel as compared to the Buckeyes. That's coming up next on a Schultze and Will edition of Danny and Dusty here on 1080 The Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
Hope everybody's enjoying their Monday out there. A Schultze and Will edition of Danny and Dusty here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. Let's get to Oregon's preparations for the Rose Bowl, of course, coming up on New Year's Day. We've been talking about it for a month. Oregon, for a while, didn't know who they were going to play. And, of course, Ohio State beating down Tennessee in the first round of the college football playoff to set up this crazy rematch. And I am very, very excited. Will, super stoked on my Ducks, posted, oh gosh, I think like 3 weeks ago, put $100 down on them to win the Natty. Sucks. I think the odds have gone up since then. They were like plus 360. They're now up to like plus 410, 425. I saw somewhere around there. So I could have gotten better money if I waited, but I was just so damn excited. But apparently now that everybody knows that they're facing Ohio State, their chances have gone down. Oregon, a 2.5-point underdog in this game, mainly because of Ohio State's defense, I would say, and the wide receiver battle leaning to Ohio State as far as talent goes. They've got Jeremiah Smith, a very good young freshman, and Egbuga as well. They're so talented in every spot, and I think a couple of positions. You do give the win, unfortunately, talent-wise, to Ohio State. But we'll get into more of that tomorrow, Will. I wanted to ask what both teams are going to be dealing with travel-wise and how that's going to affect them if they really care at this point. It was interesting to me just kind of reading this article from Oregon Live talking about how Oregon landing in Pasadena over the weekend with a business mentality. You know, Kobe Savage basically letting everybody know that Coach Lanning has emphasized that it's not a bowl game. It's a playoff game. It's do or die. You know, this is a business trip. This is really to go to work. And yeah, it's the granddaddy of them all for you Ducky fans, but this is something that means much more than that. And thankfully, to go to a game like that, Will, you only had, what, a two-hour flight? So I do wonder, you have experience with this as well, does Oregon have an advantage going into the game because of the easier travel, like 2 hours or less from Eugene down to Pasadena as compared to what, like a four-hour flight from Ohio?
No, because they all got down there, what, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, Saturday, night. Sunday.
Yeah, that's plenty of time to adapt, to change. Like, if you're Ohio State, you probably spent the whole last week, because you're not in school right now.
Yeah.
You probably practiced around game time. I bet Oregon did the exact same thing.
Smart.
So that you're used to firing at that key moment. You're used to going through your process and all of the things that you need to go through to be ready to perform at the highest level. I think especially what they're doing for travel is completely different than what anyone else does for travel. You know, like if you think about getting on a plane flight, it's a chartered flight. So you're only dealing with your teammates and a couple boosters and the coaching staff, maybe the president of your university, maybe some select band members that are getting to travel down that way, right?
The usual. For the people that you're used to dealing with.
For the most part, like a chartered flight is 1,000 times different than a normal flight.
Okay.
You're not going through TSA pre-check. You are hopping off the bus. You're getting your bag checked really quick, maybe not even at all, depending on, you know, who's taking what bags and how that all works. The flight is fully stocked with whatever food that you could want, whatever the coaching staff probably wants you eating.
Exactly.
You're relaxing. It really isn't that big of a deal. And if it was like both teams land and then they play the next day, then yeah, there would be a benefit to Oregon. A two-hour flight is much easier than a four-hour flight. But when you have, what, 5 days in between? Like, you're going to have three practices. You're going to be ready to go. That type of schedule isn't going to affect a team in a bowl game scenario like this.
What about like the familiarity for Oregon being there? Because this isn't really a new venue for them as opposed to Ohio State. This is kind of a new spot. Yeah, I get it. You know, Big Ten champions have always played at the Rose Bowl, but Oregon's visited UCLA and gone to the Rose Bowl, gone to Pasadena. They've taken this trip several times. You know, beyond Dan Lanning being in the program for multiple years now, you've got players that have been around that have taken this trip to UCLA. I guess, Will, I'm sure you had some familiarity, like, with your opponents, right? There is probably a favorite spot or two of yours that you had to go to. And I don't know if, like, you felt excited, you know, not nervous at all going to those spots as compared to others. But, like, does knowing the area maybe? Because I do feel like Oregon players, Oregon coaches know that area. They've been down there. And I think Ohio State's coaches do, too. They recruit. They go everywhere.
And Chip Kelly was literally there last year.
Exactly. But I'm not sure Ohio State's players do. But do you think that gives any advantage to Oregon, knowing the area, being familiar with your surroundings? For me, it would make it easier for me to get down to business. I don't know how that affects, you know, semi-pro or pro football players, whatever you want to call them.
I wouldn't say that it really affects this much, other than, like, are you used to going to, like, a special dinner place beforehand? Like, I remember when we traveled, we always loved traveling to L.A. because there was a barbecue spot in L.A.
Okay.
that every single year when we played Azusa Pacific, we were going to go eat there. That didn't affect how I played the day. If I ate there the night after, it didn't affect how I played the day before. It wasn't like a hungry dog runs faster type of deal. It was just like, I'm really excited to be there because there's food here. That's the only
that's
difference.
Fair.
It's like, that's a food that I like, you know? So I don't think that the venue is going to play a role. Like, it might be nice that Oregon played there this year if, hey, you know, there's a wet spot that it's a little bit slicker in this area. It's not as fast of a track, right? Because it's natural grass. So there might be a benefit to knowing, hey, how is the grass going to play? How, like, is there a spot where the sprinkler waters it too much or it doesn't get enough water? Maybe, But really, there's no extra benefit. The Rose Bowl is the granddaddy of them all for a reason. That is going to be the most pristine field and playing conditions that it is all year, because it has to be, because that's what the Rose Bowl is. I don't know that Oregon can gain any extra, hey, we've been to this part of the country earlier in the year.
Yeah.
Any advantage from that? I do think where Oregon might be able to gain an advantage is in the fact of they played in a bowl game last year that you knew you had to perform at a peak level. Like, yeah. Ohio State last year, they knew that they were going to win, right? Like, they go into a bowl game, they were playing Missouri. Missouri wasn't a top-tier opponent. Obviously, Oregon, they're going up against Liberty, not a top-tier opponent.
But Lanning's still preparing them for business.
Exactly. The Ohio State top players, they all sat out.
Yeah.
The Oregon players didn't. And so I wonder if that'll play a role. But then again, Ohio State, they just played a college football playoff game. How many Oregon Ducks have played in a college football playoff game?
That's true. But not any on this roster, that's for sure.
So
how long? I understand that they've had the time to prepare for both teams, but like we were talking about in the first hour, go podcast it wherever you get your podcasts, about Kansas City possibly dealing with a little bit of a lag after so much time being played. Do you see that happening to Oregon? I mean, Ohio State is obviously a little bit fresher. Oregon has had the extra time. That can be an advantage, but it can also be a disadvantage going into this Rose Bowl.
The advantage is that your team is probably hasn't been this healthy since you played week one.
Yeah.
Like, this is the healthiest you've been or you will ever be. The disadvantages there could be a rest versus rust issue here. I don't think it'll be this way. Again, you've played in multiple bowl games now under Coach Lanning. Coach Lanning knows how to come out of a rest, obviously not this long of a rest, but he knows how to come out of a rest period where you come out hot. They came out hot in the Fiesta Bowl against Liberty. They came out hot against North Carolina, I believe, in the Holiday Bowl his first year.
I think so, yeah.
So the most important thing is that offense needs to get humming. You need that first down. Get everything clicking in the right direction, and I think that'll be the most important thing for this Oregon team, and I think that they can do it. You have a lot of older players, right, that have gone through this, even if it wasn't with Oregon, and you have a lot of older players that have gone through this with Oregon. So they know what they need to do to come out and be firing on all cylinders.
So I guess I'm hearing what you're saying about the lack of like a quick turnaround for a game, really not spelling any advantage for either Ohio State or Oregon here, but like I still feel like, to me, I'm maybe just missing something, because Oregon didn't necessarily... Did they always show up, like, the day before their games? I thought maybe for their Friday stuff they did, but, like, Oregon going across the country, flying to, you know, Michigan, for instance, they got there on Thursday of that week, if I'm not mistaken. They didn't get there the day before, unless I'm just totally making this up.
No, they got there early. The Michigan game they went over, they got there earlier.
Yeah.
I want to say that Wisconsin was more of a traditional travel game because the game was later.
Exactly.
Like, I think some of it with the Michigan thing was that the game was earlier. It was still a noon kick, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
But it was part of, like, they wanted to get over there. They wanted to get acclimated. The beauty of the bowl games and now the playoffs is there are things that you do beforehand, and they're stupid, right? Like, oh, you get to go up and sing a rap song or have a dance battle, you know, whatever. Whatever they have you do, just don't wear fatigues like Miami, right?
God.
But they have these things in place that the teams have to go to and do that forces the teams to be there earlier, which forces the teams to acclimate earlier. And so I really just don't think that the travel is going to affect these teams. When you have 5 days to be in an area, like, they've probably already gone to the Rose Bowl. They've probably already walked around the Rose Bowl. Oregon, like, you played in the Rose Bowl, but there's going to be more fans at the Rose Bowl game than there were when you took on UCLA, you know, on a late night Big Ten after dark game. I don't know, aside from, like, maybe they have a better nutritionist that handles it better, or maybe you have... I just don't see an advantage that can be gained with how the bowl games handle it.
I understand. And I guess I sound like Duck fan trying to find a little bit of something that they can lean on. But I swear, I'm not coming from that angle. I'm coming from the angle that I heard that it was tough for Oregon to travel across the country all season. And yes, I get it. it's bowl season, and it is a little bit different, or Ohio State, does have a little bit more time to prepare than a traditional one-game turnaround that they do against Oregon, but I just still have to hold to that point a little bit, that if it affected Oregon, or if people thought it was going to affect Oregon, didn't really look like it did. They were the only undefeated team in college football all season. If people thought it would affect them at any point of the season, then I would assume or hope that people think it's going to affect Ohio State in that same way. I hear what you're saying, though, Will. This is a special game. It's a special circumstance. And, yeah, Chip Kelly was there last year. They've got familiarity on the coaching staff side, but it's just the travel for players. This is something that really, this is the first year we're seeing, you know, college players in both basketball and football having to do more pro-type travel schedules. They were pretty regional before. It was the big games, the granddaddy games where you'd have to do longer travel. So I think it's just interesting to examine that. This is kind of a new world that we're in college football.
Yeah, I think it's a bigger deal during a regular season game.
That's fair.
The travel. The travel that Oregon had to go through, and frankly that the teams have to go through when they come and play Oregon or UW or USC or UCLA. Those are big deals during the regular season when guys have to go to class until Thursday or have to go to class, you know, throughout the week. Guys don't have to go to class right now.
No, they haven't been in class for 2 weeks.
No, and you get to go to the bowl game 5 days early. So you get 3 or 4 practices while you're at the site, right? You get to go walk the grounds beforehand. The travel isn't going to be a big deal in this scenario. If it was a regular season game and Ohio State for some reason had to go 4 hours and Oregon only had to go 2 because you were playing in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. Maybe that's a problem. Maybe that's something where Oregon can gain an advantage. But when you are playing in a Rose Bowl game like this, there's just too much time in between when you travel and when you play the game as opposed to a regular season.
Well, we're just under 48 hours away from kickoff at this point. Oregon facing off against Ohio State at 2 p.m. on New Year's Day. We're going to have all the coverage of it right here on The Fan. And we're going to continue to dive into Oregon's preparations and do a little bit of a preview tomorrow for the Rose Bowl. Have a lot of Oregon Duck Ohio State talk scheduled for tomorrow here on Danny and Dusty. All right, let's switch gears, though, to another college football school and a big hire. Did Washington State get the best man for the job? That's next, but first here's Will with SportsCenter.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
Well, from Oregon's new conference to Oregon's old conference, and I actually think this is a bit of pretty good news for Wazoo. They hire South Dakota State's Jimmy Rogers as their next head coach. They got him to the Cougars on a 5-year deal, signed him for $1.57 million per year. He's 37. He comes to Pullman after leading South Dakota State to an FCS national title in 2023. Had also served as the team's defensive coordinator during its first championship season in 2022. And, of course, replaces Jake Dickert, who left earlier in the month to become the head coach at Wake Forest after 3-plus seasons in Washington. So, interesting here, Will Rogers, he actually is an alumnus of South Dakota State. He played linebacker for them and then began coaching in 2010, went to Florida Atlantic for a couple of years before coming back to South Dakota State in 2013. Now coming to the Pac-12 with the highest expectations of his career, and he has the opportunity to build on his name and to rebuild a storied program. Athletic Director Ann McCoy praised Rogers' qualifications as well as his high coaching acumen and dedication to mentoring players. That's the kind of coach that you're going to need in this position, Will. It's possible, too, that he could be bringing some players with him from South Dakota State. There is a good quarterback there, apparently, Mark Gronowski, the 2023 Walter Payton Award winner, as well as wide receiver Griffin Wild, who recently entered the transfer portal. They're both potential additions. So, I mean, things coming up roses after the weekend for Wazoo. And I got to ask you, Will, is this the best case scenario for the Cougars getting the 2023 FCS champion coach to leave his alma mater to lead your program?
Yeah, I mean, it's the best case scenario that you were going to have as a Cougar, but also at the same time, understand that he's probably gone in 2 or 3 years. If you are good, he will be gone. Well, if you were able to poach him from his alma mater, it's clear that he is going to want to move up in the coaching
rankings.
That's
a good point.
And I think that Rodgers is a highly successful coach. He just went into South Dakota State and he just won. That's all he did.
Yep.
All he ever did was win. I think this might have been his worst year, quotes around that, because of how far they got into the playoffs. They got knocked out in the semis. Like, he won a title, and the other year, I want to say that he was in the final, right? So you have clearly a successful coach who knows how to win in a smaller school environment. I would love for WSU to truly embrace the style of offense that South Dakota State runs. It is a duo-based run game with a lot of gap scheme plays, a lot of power, a lot of counter. Big offensive linemen, mean offensive linemen. They are going to lean on you. And here's the thing. WSU is going to be able to get those styles of offensive linemen because they're able to grab them at South Dakota State. They're able to grab them at North Dakota State. If I'm a WSU fan, I want to see what O-lineman and D-lineman he's bringing to me in the portal. I don't care about quarterbacks. Now, don't get me wrong. You would love to get the South Dakota State quarterback that he's had the last couple of years, but I really want the offensive lineman, and I want that scheme that he's willing to run, and understand that you're going to get a quarterback that's probably going to be a little bit of a bigger quarterback, more of a Tim Tebow style of quarterback, where his throwing isn't the greatest thing, but he can run because they love to add the quarterback in to their RPO schemes, into their zone read schemes, and frankly into just straight QB power. That's what they want to do at South Dakota State. It's very similar to what North Dakota State wants to do. Now, that being said, understand, if you have success, he's gone in a couple years. So just know that if this is the route that you're going to go down, you're going to have to re-up and find the next FCS coach or the next Mountain West coach or the next insert smaller school coach here to continue to travel through this plan. It's not a bad plan, and I think it's probably the best option that WSU has moving forward.
Yeah, they've got to replace a lot, though, unfortunately. We talked about some players that could possibly come. You're going to have to replace a lot of coaches as well. O-coordinator Ben Arbuckle gone, along with John Mateer. And then 26 scholarship players in the transfer portal as well, and leaving the school as well as 11 starters. That's just nuts. And after an 8-1 season, I mean, see, you got stuff to build on, or an 8-1 start to your season before kind of faltering when Jake Dickert kind of seemed like he started having conversations with Wake Forest at that point of the year and just didn't really care about what was happening on the field. Like, they've got the bones, Will, for some success. And I think going forward, this is a huge hire today, but I think going forward, it really spells success for the future of not just Wazoo, but Oregon State as well. These programs, they aren't laying down and taking it. They're doing everything they can to remain relevant in this really weird, strange new world. I love it, but it's a strange new world of college football. And yeah, like I said, it's good for both schools now, but moves like this, OSU's acquisition of Malik Murphy before Christmas, that is what I want to see from these schools, because it tells me, Will, that they're setting themselves up for the future, even if this Jimmy Rodgers decides to leave and he does have success and Washington State is just a stepping stone for him. It tells me that you can build this kind of just recirculating talent pool, or refill it with guys that are coming in, because OSU and Wazoo are still attractive destinations.
Yeah, well, you're also seeing two different programs go about it two different ways.
That
Oregon
is true.
State, they went and they signed Trent Bray. Trent Bray wasn't going to get a head coaching opportunity, at least at that level of college football yet. He wasn't ready. He'd done a great job as a defensive coordinator, but I think a lot of football programs, that's kind of where they viewed that he would stay. Where Oregon State comes in and they say, hey, you had a very successful playing career here. You've been a very successful coach. We're going to make you our head coach. And it feels like Bray, if he starts having success at Oregon State, it doesn't feel like he's going to go anywhere. Now, I could be wrong. It's possible that maybe he has a 10 or 11 win season. A Power 4 team comes in, they offer him a good deal, and he leaves. But it seems like he is going to stay at Oregon State for the time being. It seems like that's where he's going to want to be. He's going to have to get offered a pretty big job to get him to bolt. Where when I look at WSU, it seems like WSU is going in and they are grabbing, hey, the new young hotshot. They grab the young hotshot who had success at the FCS level. If he's able to have success at WSU, a Power Four team is going to come calling, and then he will leave again. And then WSU will have to do that same process. You saw success with this, though, with a lot of colleges in the CEO head coach type model. Yeah. Of Mario Cristobal has had success this way. He hasn't had the ultimate success in what people may have wanted at Oregon or at Miami, but what Cristobal has done a good job of is he recruits at a high level, he brings in an offensive coordinator, he brings in a defensive coordinator, he lets them run their schemes, their system. If they get a job to go be a head coach somewhere else, he brings in a new guy and lets them run their own scheme, their own system. It seems like that's kind of the route that WSU is going to go down, and I don't hate them for it. Because there wasn't a coach out there that I thought that they could get, that they give the head coaching spot to, where he's a former Coug, or his life goal is to stay in Pullman. It felt like this was the best avenue that you could go down. And so I like the move. Go grab an FCS coach, probably a year or two before a Power Four school might go and call him. Hope that he stays for 4 or 5 years. And then when he moves on, go and grab the next guy.
And when you see, we already talked about it a little bit, but the possible acquisition of your new quarterback in Gronowski, who 10,000 yards in his career, 49-6 in his career over four seasons at SDSU, as well as that national title, possibly considering declaring for the NFL draft, like getting that talent under center at Washington State up in Pullman would be huge. And it spells, like I said, success for the future of both programs. But then adding to that, I think the future of the Pac-12 conference going forward looks pretty bright. If these are the kinds of moves that Oregon State and Washington State can continue to pull off. So props, major, major great hire by the Washington State Cougars getting Jimmy Rogers from South Dakota State. Let's see if he can repeat those results up in Pullman that he did in South Dakota. All right, we got to wrap it up. Will and I will finish it up coming up next for the day, and we'll let you know who we're betting on tonight in our daily degenerate picks. It's 2:44 on The Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
Final Seggy here on a Schultze and Will edition of Danny and Dusty on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. We got a few minutes left. It's been a busy day talking a lot of NFL, talking some Oregon Ducks, previewing their matchup with Ohio State in the Rose Bowl on Wednesday, New Year's Day. Asked people what their last gift from Santa was, if they could remember that. Do see on the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-8646-FAN, a lot of good thoughts coming in about the Wazoo and OSU talk. Of course, Wazoo hiring Jimmy Rogers as their next head coach. A double check on that Malik transfer news with the Beavs. Last I heard, he hadn't actually signed with them yet. God, I haven't heard anything otherwise. Maybe the paperwork signed. But
he hasn't signed it yet.
But he has not spoken.
He's committed, against, but he's not. It like it's like most things in life, don't count it until it's been signed. So it sounds like he had committed, but he hasn't signed any official paperwork.
Let's get that money into his bank account. Somebody, what is the Kenny Dillingham quote? Pay that man his money, who is basically quoting Teddy KGB from Rounders when he gets beaten by Matt Damon's character in that movie. Yeah, pay that man his money. I really hope that's the only hang-up here, because, yeah, if Malik's having second thoughts, that ain't good. And as I get an update to that on the Vancouver Ford text line, Malik Murphy is visiting Texas Tech this weekend. Damn, Will, I hate when you verbally commit somewhere and then all of a sudden you decide to go visit other schools. That's one thing about the commitment system and transfers. I get it. Kids change their minds. Then don't commit in the first place. That would be so weird if I could just say, hey, I'm going to go work at this radio station. And then all of a sudden, you know, after saying it for not a week or two, but like a year, because that's happened to Dante Moore when he decommitted from Oregon and went to UCLA. He was a long time commit to Oregon before that. I just don't know why you commit in the damn first place.
That's what I said to Livy Dunn when I verbally committed to be her boyfriend. And then she just enters the transfer portal and picks up this Paul Skeens guy. It's Bush League.
I don't think she had to enter any portal. I think her and Paul were waiting on each other for quite a while. Sorry,
denied
Will.
My transfer request.
You strike me as one of those guys just shouting outside of the gymnastics arena, waiting to go in.
Never do that. Never, ever.
That is
just midnight DMs, dude. Come on now.
It's your best chance that you've got at getting anywhere near her.
Loved your Viore ad. What do you think about coming down to Portland?
Don't even think she's ever been here. Nor does she need to come here because...
Sounds like a great reason for her to come on by.
I mean, I'm sure it would be nice to see her up in Seattle, like in one of the suites, if the Pirates ever made it up to T-Mobile Park and Paul Skeens actually happened to be pitching during that two
Check
or three game
Voodoo
set.
Voodoo Donuts, baby?
No, don't. There's so many other better donut places here. Voodoo is such a tourist trap now. My goodness. Everybody else makes a maple bacon bar now. Like, you can get a maple bacon donut pretty much at like most normal. There's a spot in Wilsonville that I go to for my donuts, and you can get it there as well. All right, Will, we got a couple of minutes left. One thing that I like to do to wrap up every show here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan, if I did have my own show, our final segment every day would be our daily degenerate picks. I like to give a lean of the day, Will, and a lock of the day. So we're going to try get y'all's betting accounts a little bit more flush with our picks. My first pick, my lean of the day, Will, is going to be the Blazers +6.5 against the 76ers tonight. They've been playing a lot better as of late. Two wins in a row. They beat the Luka Doncic-less Dallas Mavericks over the weekend. And hosting the Sixers without Joel Embiid at the same time that Shaedon Sharpe has absolutely been balling out of his booty. He's been playing very well the past five games, and in that span, the Blazers winning three of those five games. Shaedon Sharpe averaging 23 points per game and put up 23 as well in the game against the Mavericks on Saturday. So pretty good performances for Shaedon in all of those games. I know we still don't know if Tumani Kamara or Robert Williams is going to play tonight, but just love the way that he's been leading the team. I think they still need to make a trade. We can get into that tomorrow here on Danny and Dusty. But because of Shaedon playing so well and the Blazers playing well as of late, I still hope they don't win. I want them to be in the race for Cooper Flagg. I think the Blazers are going to cover 6.5 against the Sixers today at home. What is your lean of the day, Will?
Right now, I'm going to lean with the Detroit Lions -3.5 against the 49ers. The 49ers seem to be crumbling at the seams. Kind of feels like it's time for them to kind of sell off some of the older parts and reload the Lions. Feels like Dan Campbell does everything at 1,000%. He's already said that they're not sitting anybody. They're not resting anybody. Yeah. They are going to treat this like a normal football game, and I think that they will roll.
Yeah, I was looking at the total for my lock of the day. Over under 50.5 is the Monday Night Football total. And for my lock, I'm going over just because of what you said, Will, that Dan Campbell is going to be going balls to the walls tonight. They're absolutely going to be giving max effort. I think Jahmyr Gibbs is like -250 to score an anytime touchdown. So you expect it from him. You expect one from Amon-Ra St. Brown. And then, frankly, I don't see a game where the 49ers aren't scoring a couple of touchdowns at the end, kind of adding, you know, a little bit to the score and allowing that backdoor cover to happen. So are the Niners going to get close? Probably not. But yeah, Brock Purdy's going to be tossing it up to Debo. I think he's still, if I'm the Niners, and especially if I'm Brock Purdy, Will, I think I'm trying to prove myself tonight, and people are still asking about whether or not he's going to get a big contract. I feel like he himself always steps on that field thinking that he has something to prove. So he's going to be balling out of his booty tonight. I don't think they're going to win, but he's going to be trying. So over 50.5, that is my lock of the day. Do you have a lock of the day, Will?
Yeah, I'm cheating. I'm going into the college football playoff one day early. I got
That's
Penn
okay.
State -11. I think that Abdul Carter and company, they are going to load the box. They're going to play on the other side of the line of scrimmage, and they are going to stop Ashton Jeanty from running the football. That means that Maddox Madison has to beat you. I like that matchup for Penn State.
Ooh, good pick, Will. That's a very good pick. That is going to do it, though, for this episode of Danny and Dusty. Will, thank you so much for doing double duty. He's handling all the heavy lifting. He's making me sound good while co-hosting. Appreciate you, Will Ortner. Love it every time. We're going to both be back here one more time tomorrow, filling in for the guys as Danny is still out. Dusty on the road with Oregon. Coming up, it's 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Primetime with Isaac and Suk is next here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. Have a good Monday, everyone.